We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
On today's episode, let's preview the Pac-12.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that fine gentleman over there. As always, you know him well. He's in the heart of the Midwest. He's the pride of Chicago, Illinois. Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm always good when you don't call me a native son, because nothing could be further from the truth as we get to West Coast football, Best Coast football, America's Conference,
yeah.
The show everybody's been looking forward to, the final year of 12 teams in this iteration. I don't hate how Pac-10 rolls off the tongue. It's how I grew up, Ty.
Dude, so, it could be the Pac-4 by the time we're done with this podcast.
I'll do whatever it takes, Ty, to keep West Coast football alive. I don't care. I don't care at all. That's who I am. That's how I grew up. And you can't deprive me of the joy that Kevin Warren and every single Fox executive try to take from me. USC administrators, UCLA, doesn't matter. I can't be hurt. I'm already a West Coast college football fan, Ty. I'm already broken.
Already broken. Well, with that preamble, hello. Hope you're doing well. I'm Ty Hughes Dan. This is the Solid Verbal. Thank you for stopping on by. Hit subscribe, hit follow, whatever you got the option to click. That'll guarantee that you get all of our episodes. If you are interested in going a step further because you really like the stuff that Dan and I are doing, hello, welcome. Thank you for your support. Give us a star rating or a review on said podcasting app. You can also find episodes out on YouTube. And if you're really a super fan of the show, if you really want to join the Verballerhood, you could go on out to verballers.com. That's our Patreon. It's verballers.com. We offer early access to this episodes, pretty much all of our episodes at this point, video versions of episodes, live video versions of our episodes, get access to our Discord community, bonus episodes. We did a bonus baseball episode recently, which you can go and check out, verballers.com. Yeah, on today's episode, though, we are turning our focus to the Pac-12. We've already gone through the SEC schedule, the Big Ten schedule. The Pac-12's time to shine is now. We have got thoughts on the easiest, the hardest, the most interesting, the episodes that are dripping with fettuccine Alfredo. Uh-oh. If it sounds weird, it's because it is. We will explain gumpiness, trappiness, all of these words that we have made to kind of amuse ourselves. Don't amuse our wives as much. I've tried it. But welcome into the Verballerhood, one and all. I am ready to talk some Pac-12 with you, sir. Pac-12 schedule preview coming at you here, Dan.
Yes.
Couple interesting schedule quirks.
Oh.
Related to the Pac-12. Would we agree that the four best teams, at least the four expected best teams, are USC, Utah, Oregon, and Washington in no particular order? Does that sound right to you?
That's how I view it now. I'm willing to change it 3 weeks into the season. But yeah, that's my expectation now, just in terms of combination quarterback, coaching experience, returning talent, new talent, recent results. I think that's there. But look, Oregon State was right there last year, and with the bowl game, won double-digit games against a premier SEC opponent, Ty, in that bowl game, and obviously beat their rival in Oregon. And I think there's danger in this conference. UCLA won a number of games last year as well, but you know, going through a number of changes, both with coaches, quarterback, talent, whatever. And they're especially active in the portal. But
those
right
are the
now,
four. Those are the four.
In terms of, I just want to acknowledge, you know, the quality in the conference at the top. But in terms of right now with the ceilings, the expected ceilings, I think those are the teams pending some ligaments in and around Cam Rising's knee. Those are my expectations. Yeah, we're aligned.
The case for a cannibalized Pac-12 is that all four of those teams play each other during the regular season. Some situations may vary, and we'll talk about that. That's why we're here today. But they all play each other, and that in and of itself is a great case for they might not make the playoff because they're all going to beat each other. And week seven in particular, I think week seven is when things start to go haywire. That's when we start to see things kind of congeal, as I like to say, and the Pac-12 enter a second year. But it'll be a fun back half of the schedule for sure if you're following Pac-12 football. We have two lucky teams in the Pac-12 that play all four of those purported best teams.
Oh.
And there may be two of the teams that are least equipped to deal with it in the form of Arizona State and Cal. And my third bullet point here is that 10 of the 12 teams in the conference have really interesting non-conference opponents. UCLA and Oregon State were like, we're not going to do that. we're going to schedule San Diego State. UCLA scheduled Coastal Carolina, a team I believe they will destroy. It's an interesting West Coast, East Coast matchup. But outside of those two, the other 10 have really interesting non-conference slates that we will get into here.
Yeah, there's also a couple of, I don't know if it's two or three instances of a team going on the road and then playing a Friday game. I know usually the preference would be like both teams play home before the short week, but there's at least a couple instances where a team is on the road before a Friday game. And also scheduling quirk, I believe USC has a bye before a potential Pac-12 championship game berth. Yes?
Yes, correct.
Because they get two byes because they play week zero against San Jose State. So I know that a number of USC fans look at, I think it was Wazoo a few years ago with Sam Darnold, that they had that short week Friday road situation against Wazoo. I think our friend Adam Amin actually called that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a huge upset that year that sort of derailed USC's big postseason chances. So we get that once again. We get two or three instances, though I suppose it's better than road and then road short week.
Indeed. Where do you want to start here? Where should we
start? Let's start with the champs. Let's start with Utah because they are low-key extremely fascinating, both because of their schedule and because of their personnel situation and because they're defending the crown.
This schedule is brutal.
Yeah.
This schedule is brutal. They are still scheduling like they're a group of five team desperately begging for a Power Five conference to stroll along and invite them into their hood.
We can hang, guys.
We can hang. Look at me. Mm-hmm. This schedule is stupid. They open with Florida, get them at home this year. The next week, they go to Baylor. They're also at USC, at Washington, and Arizona. The quote-unquote easy games on this schedule are Weber State, Colorado, and Cal and Arizona State. There are no weeks off, virtually no weeks off. For the Utah Utes, their over-under is 8.5. I feel bad for Utah. Utah kind of fits into that category of teams that I described on the last two episodes where you want to root for them, you're game to root for them, you want them to take the next step, but you look at the schedule and you realize even if the team is better, the record's probably worse. That's where I'm at with Utah.
Right. It's, yeah, and I can appreciate, like, I hear undertones of criticism, Ty. I can appreciate a team scheduling for recognition because Utah isn't necessarily always the school, isn't always the part of the country that attracts a lot of attention. So if we live in a world in which Utah beats Florida and Baylor in the non-conference portion of the schedule and is again the Pac-12 conference champion, then we're talking about something almost undeniable if you're comparing resumes, because Utah is at that point coming off a Rose Bowl berth. You know, it wasn't great against Penn State, but they're on the top tier of the conference squarely. And so I don't love it in terms of a final win-loss thing because it's at Baylor, right? It's Florida returning to Salt Lake, yep. But it's at Baylor. It's a road, man. Now, Utah, I think they have Arizona buffers with the Washington game, right? On the road.
Yeah.
Arizona schools buffer it. ASU would be that letdown look ahead sandwich. And even though they're on the road at USC and host Oregon in back-to-back weeks, I believe it's the week after USC is at Notre Dame, correct?
Correct.
So that's at least situationally something I can play with. I don't love, and as you mentioned, the teams that they do play with in the Pac-12, they miss Stanford and Wazoo. Those are two winnable games for Utah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you want to maximize when you have a non-conference slate like they do. You want to maximize, hopefully, you want to pray that it's maximized in conference. But it's rough. If Utah is indeed the best team, they will absolutely prove it, both within and outside of the conference. And look, Cam Rising tore his ACL against Penn State in early January. I think he had surgery in February. I don't know. He had surgery shortly thereafter. If he's back for week one, I don't think he's going to be the Cam Rising. No. If he's back for week four, I don't know if he's going to be the Cam Rising. And so it's an additional data point that worries me a bit with Utah that hopefully they can prove me wrong.
I looked at the schedule. I was screaming.
Yeah.
Going through this. Who did this? Why'd they do this? Yeah. They don't need the schedule. So much ammo. The schedule in and of itself, just within conference, is difficult. But then the tack on Florida. And look, Florida's over-under is 5.5. I haven't seen what Baylor's is yet.
Yeah.
Neither one of those teams figures to be contending for a conference title or a playoff berth. But it's still a good opponent in both cases. So to your point, yeah, if they make it through this, even if they emerge from this 10-2, 9-3, even 8-4 to an extent, I guess it'll be a really good football team that, by virtue of the schedule, by virtue of Cam Rising still getting over his knee injury, you know, they could be affected by all that stuff.
Yeah, especially with some of their pop at running back this year. I'm curious to see, and we'll get into this during preview time, if this is a different looking Utah team. Not that they were throwing the ball deep at all. They were counting on those two great tight ends last year. But I wonder what the complexion of this offense looks like as they try to navigate, especially early on. It's a toughie, Ty. It really is.
Oregon Ducks, Dan. Let's talk about the Oregon Ducks.
Okay.
Your beloved Oregon Ducks. I am looking at this schedule right now, and there are a couple things that I think are fairly obvious to me. September should be a breeze. September should
maybe.
Be a breeze. Should be a maybe?
I worry about Lubbock a little bit. Not a lot. I think Oregon's more talented than Texas Tech.
You think that, the raw Tyler Shuck energy is going to come back to bite the Ducks? Is that what we're thinking?
I just think year two of a wide open passing offense and what Oregon needs to show to America in terms of its own defense, you know, I don't look at it as automatic. I like Oregon there. I don't think it's automatic. And I don't, as your term, I don't think it's a Brady breeze.
This is how you know you're a fan of a team. Because I look at this and I say Portland State, Texas Tech, Hawaii, Colorado, and Stanford.
Sure. The best of Oregon should have no problem with
and
that.
And you look at it and you say, I don't know how I feel about Texas Tech. I would do the exact same thing talking about any of my teams. So kudos to you. You just validated your Oregon fandom.
Yeah.
But beyond September, they do go to Washington and Utah. Washington's off a bye. Oregon's coming off a bye. The USC game is at home. Oregon State is at home. There are a few potential traps on here.
It's a trap.
But I think by and large, this is set up well for Oregon.
Sure.
They don't have to go to Tucson, right? That's always a good thing.
Love it.
And if you're an Oregon fan, you know, you rightly point out a couple of the road spots and situationally, all right, could get weird here and there. But I think I feel pretty good about this from afar with no vested emotional interest in the Ducks.
I feel good about it right now based on my interpretation and expectation for teams in the Pac-12, which is based in some fact and some gut and some just historical fear on my part as an Oregon fan. It's very, and I think you have the sound at the ready, it's very buffery to me.
There are buffers.
Buffer zone.
Yeah, there are buffers.
It feels, that's what I wrote down, very buffery that they have a bye before Washington, which Washington also does before that game. They have Wazoo at home before they travel to Utah. I think Wazoo will be fine. I just don't think there's upper level talent there, and there's a lot of shuffling in and out of that program right now. They have Cal before USC, and they're at ASU, and that's that short week because it's the Friday. I think it's Black Friday when they're playing the Platypus Cup or whatever we're calling it now. And look, I expect ASU to eventually be feisty. I just think it's once again an overhaul job with a first year head coach and no clear, decent quarterback to me. And so I look at ASU, despite the recent history of Oregon being in a great place and losing on the road in Tempe, I think it is buffery. And the letdown look ahead sandwich would be that ASU game on the road because it's between USC and Oregon State. And as you mentioned, they miss Arizona, which is always wonderful. They destroyed him in the desert last year, which felt great.
Yeah.
And they miss UCLA as well. Always happy to miss UCLA and Chip Kelly, because at any given time, even without Zach Charbonnet, DTR, whatever, they're going to have weaponry. The transfer receivers should be good. I'm in on UCLA medium term. I think short term they're going to be fine, but nothing crazy. And so I guess the conditional fettuccine Alfredo tie is if Wazoo is feisty. That becomes difficult after the bye.
The conditional fettuccine. I got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I think it's fine. I think there's a great opportunity for Oregon. And again, we'll get into this on the proper team and conference preview portion of the calendar. I think if Oregon plays to its talent level, they're able to stay a little bit healthier, especially at quarterback. And the transfers work out. Some of the rotational freshmen, especially up front on defense, work out. It's a new look secondary. If it works out around expectation, this should be a double-digit win team.
I agree.
With this schedule.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. Provided they don't drop a dumb one. And I don't think any team in college football is above the dumb ones, but certainly the more talent you add to your roster, the less likely those things are, I think, to happen. That's probably debatable. That's probably debatable.
I don't write in at Utah as a win. I do not.
I don't write it in either.
At Washington. Yeah.
I don't write it in either, but I see Washington, Utah, and USC as the most obvious losses. And if you told me they're going to win two of those three, I'd sign up for that. I would say, yeah, I don't know which two. I know two are on the road. You lose two of those, you win the rest of your games, which seems plausible. You hit that over 9.5. Get the 10 wins. So
in order, I think I'm most worried about at Washington, USC, at Utah.
I think that's the right order. Yeah.
Because at the heart of my fear is quarterback. And I'm not there right now with Cam Rising, although, again, he's shredded Oregon previously, but coming off of the ACL. I think it's a toss. I think they can win all three of those games.
Sure. Oh, like, I agree.
I think the best of Oregon can win those three games because these are not perfectly aligned teams. So I think Oregon is built as well this year for a big run as they have been in recent history.
Let's talk about Arizona State. Let's talk about Arizona State. As I said at the top, Arizona State is one of two teams in the conference that has to play all four. And I have four maybe in air quotes here.
Yeah.
All four of the big guns in the Pac-12, at least the time of recording in late May. They've got Washington and Utah both on the road. They host USC and Oregon. The final 6 weeks of this schedule close out at Washington, home against Wazoo. At Utah, at UCLA, home versus Oregon, home versus Arizona for the Territorial Cup. There's a lot of fettuccine Alfredo there.
I ate more fettuccine Alfredo and drank less water than I have in my entire life.
Explain that reference, by the way.
The reference is that Michael Scott was carb loading for a 5K. And he ate, as he said, as much fettuccine Alfredo and drank less water than at any point in his life. And so we're calling it fettuccine Alfredo because you need to carb load for what appears to be a really rough stretch of the schedule.
post bye week, your bye week, what happens after, you need to carb load and hopefully
yeah, I mean,
a better fashion.
The bye week, I think, delineates it a little bit cleaner for our purposes here. But really, I'm just looking at it in terms of any rough stretch. Just got to gear up for. I say that, I bring up that rough stretch because I look at the over under here and I say ASU's at 5. It feels almost impossible to me that ASU gets to 6 with this schedule. Unless you believe in the occult forces of the body blow, the look ahead, the letdown, the look ahead, letdown sandwich.
That's a lights out sandwich. I mean, really like a dynamite, legit sandwich.
Because there is a little bit of 2022 Texas Tech on this schedule. And Arizona State finds themselves in a lot of interesting spots a la Forrest
Gump. I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
ASU's the all sound clip team in the Pac-12
wow.
because they get Washington a week after Washington plays Oregon. They get a home game a week after Utah plays USC and Oregon back to back and a week before Utah goes to Washington. Mm-hmm. They're at home a week after Oregon plays USC and a week before the rivalry against Oregon State.
Yep.
A week after Arizona plays Utah. There's all sorts of scenarios. I counted 5 of them here where Arizona State pops up in a very interesting spot on somebody's schedule. And
I think that's right.
So that makes it interesting. It still doesn't make it possible to me that they would get to 6. 5, maybe. 4, okay. But 6 is a bridge too far.
Well, are you circling that Oklahoma State game as a loss?
No.
Okay. Southern no. Utah, Oklahoma State, Fresno State. I guess it depends on your belief in Alan Bowman on the road. Arizona State plays one road game the first 7 weeks of the season.
Correct.
That's pretty nice for Kenny Dillingham. First year as a head coach, new roster to get their feet under them a little bit, staying at home, staying in the sun. A lot of night games happening in September. USC has the bye before they play, correct?
Yep.
It's definitely fettuccine Alfredo. I could see a universe in which it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I guess it hinges on the Territorial Cup and I guess Wazoo.
Yeah.
And maybe sneaking up on Oregon in that spot. But it means that you beat, I believe, Mikey Keen in Fresno State. Your guy, no. Mikey Keen.
Man.
Unless it's a Logan Fife team. Alan Bowman in Oklahoma State.
Mikey Keen. Yeah.
Colorado's winnable, but also I think Colorado by that point might view ASU as winnable.
Yeah.
Right? So that's interesting. That could be something that turns on both of them for those win total over-unders. But they're going to need to, I don't know if it's what, Trenton Bourgeois, or I guess Drew Pine.
We're just going to write off Jaden Rashada like that?
Probably. Yeah. Right now.
Man, I would take Jaden Rashada lefty over Drew Pine.
So wait, hold on. So this means they miss Stanford and Oregon State. Oregon State definitely not winnable, at least on the surface. Missing Stanford sucks because that would have been a nice pencil in.
I don't know why you're ruling out Jaden Rashada, but.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
True freshman starting day one?
I would take him 1,000 times over Drew Pine, but I'm biased.
Okay.
1,000 times. 1,001 times, but whatever.
That makes me feel worse against this schedule.
I don't know. It's interesting. I actually have them down as one of my more interesting schedules.
Okay.
Arizona State, because I don't fully understand the over-under. And usually when I don't understand it, it means that somebody smarter does.
Well, here's the other thing. They fired their coach after whatever it was, 2 or 3 games last year.
Yeah.
And also their coach didn't coach well. And there is the idea that while the Pac-12, I think, is going to be tough because of the returning quarterbacks this year, that ASU underperformed last year. Now, it's an overhauled roster. But if we're to believe that ASU situationally finds itself in a good place and brought in some guys, then maybe we're sleeping on them a little bit. We're sleeping on the real coach bump if Kenny Dillingham is a real coach.
I saw an interview, I think, that Andy Staples did with Kenny Dillingham. Kenny Dillingham may not be old enough to drive.
He just has a young look.
Big time baby face.
Yeah, that's all.
I wish him well. I think they're interesting this year.
Yeah, same.
Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to UW. Let's go to Washington.
UW. Great year. Didn't your brother go to UW?
He did. Proud alum.
Washington's over under is 9. It is one of the easier slates in the Pac-12, in my view. It's got a nice little setup here. The road schedule is not bad. It's a little weird in spots. They got road games at Michigan State, Arizona, Stanford, USC, and Oregon State. But decent buffers, I think. Right?
Buffer zone.
It's not bad. November could get a little dicey, but it's not like anything on here appears overwhelming. Things can change with injury. But you're looking at a non-conference slate that not only features Michigan State, as we mentioned before, but also Boise and Tulsa. It's enough juice to kind of give them some status with the names, but I don't think any of those teams are going to be world beaters this year. And I would expect that Washington would be able to take care of business. So I look at this on the surface and I say, okay, we're talking. We're talking potential over here with Washington. I feel very good about where they're at. We did the interview with Mike Varell. If you go back and listen to some of the first year coaching debriefs that we did a couple weeks ago, and we talked a lot about how do you fix the defense? How do you make the defense better? Because obviously the offense got to a really good place in year one under Kalen DeBoer and Michael Penix Jr., et cetera, et cetera. But to me, it's a question of defense. It's a question of how do they handle what is a tougher stretch as we get into the back half of the schedule. But by and large, if you're one of the preeminent assumed powers in the conference, you can't do a whole lot better than this. This looks okay to me.
Yeah, schedule-wise, they're in a good place. I worry about specific parts of their roster, namely back half of their defense. I think they're going to get after the quarterback pretty well. Yeah. I don't love the offensive line, but two great receivers, what should be a very, very good year from Michael Penix if he can stay healthy, which is that big if for him. So I think Washington's in a good place. Now, this is also a Washington team that struggled at times. Like, their record was great. For a first-year situation, record was terrific. Finishing out that Oregon game, you know, escaping the air, I think it was the Arizona game. It was like a three-point game in the fourth quarter. That was great. They missed UCLA this year, which they lost to last year,
yep,
I believe.
Yep.
Washington, they've got, they're at Arizona, which feels a little bit trappy before their bye. If you are to believe in the occult forces, like you mentioned earlier, Washington has never enjoyed the Stanford experience, and they're at Stanford this year. It's a different Stanford situation, of course.
No.
But that's before that rougher stretch of they're at USC, Utah, at Oregon State, and Wazoo, correct?
Yep.
That's the stretch.
Yep.
So I think there are landmines here, and I don't think Washington is a finished product, which worries me a little bit on behalf of Washington, which no Washington fan wants me to be on their behalf.
Never, never.
I think it's tricky. I think the Michigan State, it's going to be a big test in terms of environment, because I don't think Michigan State is all that great, but it's a revenge spot at home. It's the first big game of the season for the Spartans. Boise State loves playing spoiler against Pac-12 schools, traditionally speaking. And, you know, again, occult forces. But all things considered, missing UCLA, you'd rather them miss somebody else other than Colorado, because that would have been what looks to be a pseudo layup right now. Washington's in a good place. They're in a good place. They should. Again, that number is what? Would you say 9.5?
Yeah. Over under for Washington this year, coming off of what they did last season, 9 wins.
I think they're in a good place. I think they're in a good place. I'd like to see more from that defense.
Yeah. Well, you, me, and the rest of Washington Nation, Husky Nation.
Because, again, they'll have USC, Utah, Oregon State, Oregon, Arizona, in terms of obviously going to have decent to very good offenses. So that's the concern right now. But, again, if you're a Washington fan, you got to be happy about those games coming to Seattle. And by those games, I mean Utah and Oregon. Great place.
You mentioned Stanford, the Stanford situation.
Huh?
And I'm reminded a little bit of Wedding Crashers. What is our situation, Dad? Well, I'll tell you, Dan. I'll tell you what it is. Stanford has road games at Hawaii, USC, Colorado, Wazoo, and Oregon State, which isn't too shabby. They do play Oregon, yep, UCLA, Washington, and Notre Dame at home. It is not necessarily a blistering slate, but it's a new coach. It's a new quarterback. It's a lot of not really knowing what to expect. It's a lot of the baggage from what we've seen out of a Stanford program that's been in decline over the last couple of years. And it's an over-under of 3 as a starting point. So I look at this and I don't see an obvious path to 4. I don't know if I have enough information to say much of anything about Stanford at this point. You may have more information than I. But by and large, just without all of the additional context and baggage of what we've come to know about the Stanford program as of late, on the surface, the schedule has decent enough buffers. It's not like there's a murderer's row.
Right.
The road games aren't terrible, but you just know that there's this other dimension to the analysis here that we need to get into, which is why I expect that none of us are going to want to go Stanford over.
Yeah, I guess if you value Troy Taylor, the new head coach, and you value that David Shaw was a good coach, but near the end just couldn't get it figured out and couldn't find ways to produce an explosive offense in the passing game consistently, couldn't find ways to build a defense. You know, everything was just off at Stanford these past few years, even with like a weirdly up 2020, I want to say.
Yeah.
They won some games. I guess you just have to be a deep sleeping believer on Stanford this year that you can find the wins with, what, Hawaii, Sac State. Look, there are teams on this schedule that are deeply flawed. Like, I don't think the Arizona defense is going to be as bad as it was last year, but the game is at home. It's after Sac State. Who knows? Maybe Arizona's looking ahead to what they have UW and USC the next couple weeks after that. So they're in kind of a nice look-ahead situation with this schedule. And so, look, they're at Colorado after a bye. They're at Wazoo. I think in a stretch of games that Wazoo is seeing as winnable, but I don't know. They're sandwiched right there in the middle. I don't hate this schedule. Cal could be really bad. We'll get there, but they made changes on offense. They hired, what, Jake Spavital,
to run their offense. We'll talk about Cal next. I got all sorts of Cal thoughts.
But this is sort of a wing and a prayer. Because, again, not many people even cover Stanford football. So information is scant out there.
They're college football's North Korea. Can't get info out, man.
Weird.
Cal.
Yeah.
Cal, I've got listed as my most interesting team in the Pac-12.
Okay.
In terms of schedule, for starters, their likely starting quarterback is a TCU transfer named Sam Jackson, which we will cherish and love and never forget to remind you of. Never.
Who just came in? I think Ben Finley transferred him from NC State after spring, I want to say.
I hope that they go with Sam Jackson. Okay.
Okay.
Just don't so rain, don't rain life, on my name. Parade.
Sorry.
I want Sam Jackson. We all want Sam Jackson, but okay. You also mentioned about Jake Spavital. Last year's offense was slow and it stunk. And so they hired Spavital to come in and he wants to play super fast. To be fair, this version of the offense could also stink if the offensive line does not improve. It was not very good last year. But at least they're trying. They're trying to make it different. They're trying to make it better. The defense notably took a really big step back last year as well. They had almost no pass rush. So they tried to patch up a couple of their holes in the portal. We'll see if that helps. There is a world in which the offense really stinks again, but it's quicker, and that stresses out a defense that has depth concerns and the whole thing goes bust. Right. That's a possibility. Or it could get better. Yes. I have not done the full deep dive on Cal football. There will be a time and place for that, maybe in the latter stages of July or through the early part of August. But I would consider putting maybe one monthly mortgage payment on the under right now. Right now it's sitting, I think, at 4.5, right. Excuse me. 4.5 is the over-under. They're on the road at Washington, on the road at Utah, on the road at Oregon. They've got Auburn in week 2. I count 2 wins on this schedule that feel like sure bets and that's it. But there is a Gumpy quality here, is there not? Did you look at this?
There is, absolutely.
There's a Cal sandwich situation that we should talk about.
That's a lights out sandwich. I mean, really like a dynamite, legit sandwich.
Sandwiched in between Utah and USC for Oregon. Sandwiched in between Utah and UCLA for Oregon State. Sandwiched in between Utah and Washington for USC. Sandwiched in between road games for Washington at Michigan State, at Arizona, And then we've got an open face situation for Utah a week before they play USC.
I saw this as well.
So look, 4.5 is a bigger number than I expected. I don't feel great about that number, but I think Cal will be very interesting because of the new offense, because of weird situations, because I think that this is probably like they got to make it fly this year. Otherwise, I don't know what it means for Justin Wilcox.
Yeah, missing Arizona and Colorado is tough because you want to load up on those winnable defenses, especially if you're a team like Cal and you want to hit that over. You want the schedule to be as advantageous defensively as humanly possible if you're a team that struggles on offense. But your point is well taken because, look, they even though they lose, they had two good receivers last year. One of them left for UCLA, I believe, J. Michael Sturdivant. I still think, without doing a deep dive on this roster, that they might be all right.
Okay.
Justin Wilcox performs in September, so maybe they have Auburn, right?
They do have Auburn. And you said when we did our SEC preview that you wouldn't count Auburn beating Cal as a sure thing.
Cal, again, this is traditional. This is different rosters, different times, different opponents. But Justin Wilcox didn't win a bunch of games early on in his career, but seemed to exclusively win September games. Like, his non-conference record, I think for whatever reason, Cal, I mean, I understand the reason now, but they've been overlooked traditionally. They've beaten some big-time programs in September and then collapsed or had injury issues during the Pac-12 season. We'll see. I just don't think they're in a great place right now.
They are interesting, though. I did list them as one of my more interesting teams.
Situationally interesting.
Yeah, because of the sandwiches in the in the Pac-12. Hey, congrats to Ryan Shelby, Jimmy Heaters, and Andy Jennings, who answered our trivia question correctly from the newsletter. The question was, in 2022, the leading rusher and tackler on this Power 5 team shared the same last name. The correct answer? Arkansas, courtesy of Raheem and Drew Sanders. Look out for another trivia question in our newsletter soon. Sign up for free at quickslants.solidverbal.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Should we talk about Colorado now?
Let's have the Colorado conversation.
Let's have the Colorado conversation. Colorado is in a very interesting spot. We know about the roster turnover. That's not going to help, especially since in the first month of the season, they're at TCU, home against Nebraska. There's a Colorado State game, which hopefully they'll win. And then they're at Oregon and home versus USC in the month of September. That's not easy. Colorado, it occurred to me, is sort of like the anti-Forrest Gump this year. With the exception of their game against Arizona and maybe Wazoo, they pretty much go an entire season without catching anyone in a really advantageous spot. Look at this. It is truly remarkable. that outside of all the other factors that are working against them, in many cases, we could at least lean on the schedule. We did with Arizona State. You can't do that with Colorado. In almost every game, a team looks like they'll be loaded for bear, ready to destroy them by about 50 points.
Oh,
it's true.
I know.
So your over-under is 3. I'm not touching that. I want Colorado to be good and interesting and be back on the road to becoming like a blue blood program. But man,
wow,
I don't see it with the schedule. It's not ideal, frankly.
All right. So which games do you have down here as winnable? And stretch for this, Ty. Stretch for it.
Winnable. Colorado State's winnable. Stanford, I think, is winnable. Nebraska. I don't know what Nebraska's going to look like, but that's one. Fair.
Yep.
Arizona State.
That's what I have down. Those are the five. I have Nebraska, Colorado State, ASU, Stanford, Arizona. I'm not saying they're winning those games. I'm saying because of the overhauled nature of both Colorado and a couple of those programs there, ASU and Nebraska, that there is a world in which the game is 50-50 and Colorado ends up on top. So 5 is the like scaffolding number.
Mm.
So then you're saying to yourself, at ASU is going to be tough. Nebraska is going to be super well coached, even if the roster isn't there in year one, bringing a bunch of players who didn't really see the field at Georgia. Lose a couple quarterbacks and what, Casey Thompson and Logan Smothers both left.
Yep.
It's just very new, especially in that quarterback room. And Stanford, we just talked about. Arizona, again, I think they're going to have an improved defense, but not crazy. I think that's the best we can hope for, is a miraculous 5-7 for Colorado.
A 5-7 campaign in year one would be truly miraculous.
Yeah.
That would be miraculous. I don't see it. And I'm dismayed that the schedule hasn't done them more favors here.
They get USC on a second straight road game. I think the same for Oregon State. Yes.
Yeah.
They get Arizona after their fettuccine stretch, which is, Oklahoma, Oregon State, UCLA at Colorado. That's Arizona's fettuccine stretch.
Yeah.
Their own is at UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona at Wazoo on a Friday night, and then at Utah to finish things out. They get Wazoo after a short week, and that's Wazoo coming off a road game, like I mentioned at the top. And before the Apple Cup. So I'm just saying situationally.
I could see that one. The two that I called out were the Wazoo game and the Arizona game. But otherwise, I don't know. Colorado's in a very tough spot for a multitude of reasons.
Definitely.
All right. Let's talk about USC.
Okay, let's talk USC.
USC, it's great that they start with San Jose State, Nevada, and Stanford.
Yeah, comfy.
Nice and comfy. It gives them time to carb load.
I ate more fettuccine Alfredo and drank less water than I have in my entire life.
They're going to need as much fettuccine Alfredo as they can
shovel down
before they get to October and November, because the back half of this schedule is a tester. If they make it through this undefeated, they should be the number one team in the country.
Okay.
I don't think they will. I don't think they've got the defense to do it. But if they make it through this undefeated, they should be number one. All things being equal, if there are other undefeated teams, what have you. This is a really tough schedule, and I've got it listed as maybe the toughest in the conference. After that opening stretch where they've got San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford, they go on a bye because they play week 0.
Week zero, yeah.
And even after coming off of that bye, just to close out September, they're at Arizona State, at Colorado. Okay, big deal. Week 6, home against Arizona, still not terrible. But the remaining 6 games here are tough. At Notre Dame, home against Utah. At Cal, which is one of those Cal sandwiches. Back home against Washington, at Oregon, back home in air quotes, against UCLA. So
it's home. It's home.
It's home. I know. This is all to say that we will know a lot more about USC by December. And it may not be until the first week of December that we know exactly what we've got here with the Trojans, because from week 7 on is when we will find out what they're made of.
Yes.
And we will find out if the defense has improved. We will find out the limits of what Caleb Williams can do on his own. But again, that stretch of Notre Dame, Utah, Cal, Washington, Oregon, UCLA will be brutal. And if USC emerges from this, nobody can try to make the argument, oh, they played the Pac-12 schedule. Oh, they played nobody. This is a tough slate, man. This is really tough.
It's also just in terms of offensive ceiling, if we are to believe right now in late May, that defense is still very much going to be an issue, even if they're improved and they've added some interesting pieces. It's at their best, an operating Sam Hartman Notre Dame offense that should have a much higher ceiling than they've had recently. A healthy Cam Rising. What I think will be an improved Cal offense with Jake Spavadal, I don't know.
It'll be faster. We know it'll be faster.
Yeah. Whatever happens, it'll be faster.
It'll be faster.
It's Penix, it's Bo Nix, it's Chip Kelly, and I guess for them, if they're able to pseudo make it through unscathed, they have the bye week before the Pac-12 championship game in this new divisionless conference. So yes, if they're able to weather that storm, hats off to the Trojans.
I don't know how I feel about it, frankly.
Okay.
I'm not going to, as a Notre Dame fan, come on the air here and say, I'm really rooting for USC this year. That would be disingenuous. It's right. Never really a thing deep down into my core. But this slate will be a tester. We will find out how they've grown in the offseason.
Here's the other thing. Yeah.
Starting in week 7.
So last year on the road. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
3-point win, 1-point loss, late 8-point win, which was good. It's still good to win. That's better than losing. Snuck away with a 3-point win despite looking like they were going to lose. Lose in the championship game. Caleb Williams gets hurt. They're just destroyed by Utah. Lose last second away from home, Tulane, in the bowl game. This year on the road, USC has ASU, winnable. Colorado, winnable. Notre Dame, real tough. Cal, absolutely winnable. Oregon, real tough. Autzen Stadium. So it's not even just that back half slate. It's that there's just getting Notre Dame and Oregon on the road in that stretch is going to be an added test for an SC team last year that struggled. Now without a couple of huge pieces on offense that helped to bail them out at times.
If I told you now that USC beat Cal in the middle of that fettuccine Alfredo plate,
mm-hmm.
whenever they play, late in the season, if they beat them 51-50 in a shootout, I think that's totally believable. You look at last year.
51-50 against Cal?
They beat Cal 41-35 last year in a bit of a shootout.
I know.
So
that was wild.
I don't know. I think it's going to be a really interesting slate for them.
Here's the other thing, too, is as you look at that run of games, again, I'm giving you reasons to be skeptical of USC. Another one might be the universe and how turnover numbers work out and regression to a more regular number. And that could be costly for USC. We're also not respecting in our conversation enough right now that at any given moment, Caleb Williams can perform magic.
Mm.
And there is no other quarterback in this conference, maybe in the country, that can single-handedly will his team to wins we didn't think are possible. Were possible, whatever. Like Caleb Williams can.
Agreed.
So that's why, and I think this your sentiment is true, but I think we've skipped over that fact that no matter what this schedule looks like, no matter what this back half looks like, they have a superhero. And there are 3.5 teams who can kind of sort of boast that at any position, let alone quarterback.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yep.
Washington State. The good news is no USC and no Utah.
Yep.
The bad news is that the schedule is kind of a joke. The first two times I studied this, I swear I counted 8 road games.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough. And then it does kind of feel like they have more road games than they should. There mm-hmm. are only 6, but 5 of them are after week 5, which means that I believe they've only got 3 home games through the months of October and November.
Yeah.
So what we'll know about Wazoo by December is that they have a lot more travel miles on their accounts. One of their home games, also of note, is in September against New Look, Wisconsin. So that is not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. I'm looking at this schedule. I'm seeing an over-under of 6.5. I feel comfortable with 3 wins, with 4 wins, with 7. I don't think so, Dan. Where are 7 wins coming from on this thing?
I don't know. They lost a lot of guys. It was not a great portal year, players or coaches, for Wazoo. They have a quarterback who I don't think I'm as high on as I think the consensus is in Cam Ward, and you were at least at the beginning of last year. Defense performed last year. I didn't hate their defense last year. And so I like that at least as an entry point. And as much as you are looking at this as a like murderer's row, and it is at times, I'm also not crazy about a lot of these teams on the schedule. Like Wazoo is not in the most stable of places, but I think they're a quality team. And when you look at like where Cal and Stanford and ASU and Arizona, Colorado, UCLA even, a lot of these teams have recently, as in last year, done something catastrophically and abysmally, not a word, but they've just been abysmal at something. And if Wazoo is merely a competent, quality team, even with this tough schedule, I think there are wins to be had. That's my devil's advocate. I'm still worried. Plus, I'm very much worried.
We just found out that they're like over budget. They're implementing a hiring freeze. Non-essential travel and purchases and more is being curtailed because of Pac-12 weirdness.
I mean, that's not a Wazoo thing.
It's not a Wazoo thing. Wazoo got the headlines, but...
Right.
I don't know, just weird vibes for me. And I get what you're saying. It's not like we're looking at this and we're saying, oh, watch out for Colorado on a Friday.
Right.
Just seems like a lot that they're on the road 5 times down the stretch, not home through like the meat of their schedule. I don't know. I don't like that.
So. I mean, isn't it like you don't have to be faster than the bear? You have to be faster than the guy next to you.
Than your buddy. Yeah.
Right. And so you don't have to be great. You just have to be a little bit better than Arizona or ASU or Stanford or Cal or Colorado. Like as much as they're on the road, like how many people are going to be at the Rose Bowl for the UCLA game? How many UCLA fans are going to show up for the Wazoo game in the middle of the season? 23,000?
Probably not.
Right. And so I just think you just have to be better than the UCLA defense. You just have to be better than the ASU offense. You just have to be better than the Colorado defense. You just have to be better than the Cal offense. Like, I don't know. I think I understand that number.
All right. Well, that makes one of us.
Yeah, that's all.
You mentioned UCLA. Treasure! I like this schedule.
No. I adore this schedule. Treasure! I would do sensual things to this schedule. I would nibble on this schedule's ear.
Okay.
All right, continue.
8.5 is the over-under. Why are you feeling such vapors, I don't know, for the schedule?
As you mentioned, their non-conference is what? Coastal Carolina, San Diego State.
North Carolina
Dame, right?
Central.
Stanford has Notre Dame. North Carolina Central, Coastal Carolina, San Diego State on the road, like 2 hours down the road. It's not bad. It's a bus ride. It's at Utah, which for sure will be quite difficult. But again, that's week 4. We don't know Cam Rising's knee status then. And then road wise at Oregon State, buffered by a Wazoo team you're not interested in.
Not at
all. 21,412 people at the Rose Bowl. At Oregon State's tough. At Stanford, less tough. Not a lot of people going to be at that game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people at Stanford games in general this year. A Colorado team at home that I don't think is going to be the most difficult thing in the world. Chip Kelly's just going to run straight at them. At Arizona, they lost this game last year. It's in the desert. It's tricky. I understand. We're still talking about Arizona. ASU at USC. So, yes, it's a road game in that it's not in their home stadium, but also they were right there to win that game last year. USC needed a great defensive lineman interception to seal that game. And they get a Cal team at home after that. And that's both a post-rivalry game for Cal and UCLA, I believe. That's after the game that Cal has, obviously, every year with Stanford. So UCLA misses Oregon and Washington. Is that what I'm reading correctly on the schedule?
You are correct, sir.
Nice little duo. UCLA beat Washington last year, of course. If this were the schedule last year, we'd likely be talking about a 10-2 UCLA during the regular season. It's just UCLA is not built this year to go 10-2, but I don't know. I think that schedule kind of rules, Ty.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I jotted down sleeping Giants.
No, I'm not there because I'm, you know, are they going to start a true freshman at quarterback? Are they going to start like a perennial backup in Ethan Garber's? Like, I don't know. I don't think they have the firepower at quarterback this year. I don't love their offensive line. I think their defense, they've got a couple of like interesting good dudes, but I don't think they have the depth to do anything special this year. They're going to lose one or two dumb games, but I think the schedule will buffer that final record nicely.
Buffer zone.
Vegas believes in Oregon State with a win total of 8. The question, Dan, is do you believe in your hated rival, the Oregon State Beavers?
Okay, so they open with 4 winnable games. San Jose State, UC Davis, San Diego State, at Wazoo. They beat Wazoo last year. So it's winnable, even though it's tough to play in the Palouse. They have Utah at home on a Friday, right? And they're at Wazoo the week before. Who's at Wazoo the week before? Oregon State?
If you're talking about Oregon State, Oregon State's got a run here of San Jose State on the road, UC Davis, San Diego State to open. Then they go to Wazoo in week 4.
So they've got road before Friday. That's what I'm telling you. That was something I
mentioned. Road before Friday. Yeah, excuse me. Road before Friday before they go to, before they come back home against Utah for the Friday night game. And then they go on the road again the following week against Cal.
Both Washington and Oregon, and that's Oregon on the road, are buffered. And Oregon has that short week at ASU, as I mentioned. And they miss USC. They miss ASU. Oregon State, what'd you say their number was?
8.
Oh, man. I think they can get it. I trust Jonathan Smith implicitly to run an efficient offense. I think DJU will be better. We'll see on Aiden Childs, by the way. They have a freshman quarterback who might be like very low-key special. Defense improved, lose a couple key pieces. The secondary was so good last year, but they bring back a number of interesting pieces. Yeah, I think they can win 8 games.
Here's the thing about the schedule. Their toughest road games are at Wazoo, at Arizona, and at Oregon on a Friday, the rivalry game. Relatively speaking, and I underline relatively because, you know, Stanford's got a strong case, but they're starting from scratch this year, and every team's kind of coming at this from a different spot. Mm-hmm. Relatively speaking, I think it's the easiest road slate in the Pac-12 in that it's, to my eye, far less difficult than some of the other situations around the conference. And I think it's manageable for Oregon State. I don't think anybody else really comes close to it. Utah, UCLA, and Washington, all those games are at home, which is helpful. Those are tough opponents, but they're at home. And that's helpful. And Oregon State and Corvallis can sometimes be weird.
Mm-hmm.
I like what Oregon State did last year. I like it a lot. Defense was solid. They somehow won 9 games with an accounting firm of Ben Gulbranson and Chance Nolan. Quarterback. If you are a DJU or just otherwise a quarterback believer at Oregon State, that's going to take their offense next level. This sets up pretty well for that. It really does. 8 wins is not over aggressive. 8 wins feels like about the right number. But just given the way the schedule sets up, I could
great schedule.
I could see throwing a few shekels on the over here and now, feeling okay about it.
You go back to the occult forces. This is an Oregon State program, at least under Mike Riley, 100% losing to San Jose State or UC Davis. Even with good teams.
I know. I didn't want to say it.
Those games. I know. San Diego State, I feel less confident in them beating Oregon State in Corvallis. So let's say that Oregon State, if I were to tell you, I can't tell you the record. I can't tell you how it happens.
Yeah.
But if future me visited this show and says, Oregon State is legit pretty good.
Yeah.
That's all that you have about Dan from the future comes back to May and says, I come from January of 2024, and I can tell you Oregon State is legit pretty good, if not good at times. How many sims, having that information, how many universe simulations out of 100 is Oregon State 10-0 heading into Washington and Oregon? So beating Utah and UCLA essentially would be the big questions in that scenario.
40?
40?
40 out of 100?
40 out of 100 if they're pretty good going 10-0? I was in on like 13 to 17 simulations out of 100.
30?
Wow. So that tells me that your interpretation of Oregon State as pretty good to legit good is you're all in on Oregon State.
I'm not sure I fully understood your question, but
what I'm saying is if the information that you have without detail is that Oregon State is pretty good to at times legit good.
Yeah.
That what that looks like in your brain is really impressive.
Well,
the context of Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, what it looks like, obviously, it's winning the very winnable games that we outlined.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about 10-0, we're talking about UCLA and Utah. Can they beat UCLA and Utah?
Short week Utah, Friday night.
Short week Utah, don't know the status of Cam Rising. That'll be a bit of a grinder. But games at home, they could win that game. We've seen Utah lose games like that.
Definitely.
And they beat UCLA. You know, with the UCLA's defensive issues, if Oregon State can get its defense playing a little bit better and you know, if they can take their offense next level to score with UCLA, I think it's doable. So I don't think it's far-fetched that they would start 10-0. I don't think it's likely.
Okay.
But I don't think it's far-fetched at all. So for me to say 40 or 30 out of 100 simulations, no, that doesn't feel like it's too big of a stretch at all.
I'm at 8-4 with them. Overall, 8-4. I think they're going to take care of business more consistently than Oregon State teams have over these past few years against teams that they should beat. And they'll jump up and beat. I think they'll split UCLA and Utah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Looking at the schedule, what is the dumb loss that will annoy Oregon State fans when they look back? If future Ty comes back and says they had a great thing going until this game.
Yeah.
And after that point, fans were very frustrated that they lost it.
At Cal or at Colorado?
Mm.
Yeah. At Cal because it's sandwiched, right?
It's sandwiched.
It's a sandwich on the road. And I don't know. That game could be like a, you know, 10 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. And at Colorado because Colorado has, well, they have UCLA the week before, but it's just one of those games where, you know, maybe Oregon State just doesn't have it. And it's on the road. It's at altitude. You know how I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would put that as like they have a good season, but they lost to Dion. And you're like, oh, not that.
I need a
not
shout.
That. Yeah.
All right. In closing here, as you look through all of the schedules for each of these 12 teams, did it change your opinion or your projections or opinions on how things are going to shake out this year?
Well, we've talked about Cam Rising's knee way too much, but no, not especially. I think Washington, looking at their schedule, if they're undefeated going into the bye week, I think they're going to be crazy difficult in the back half. Even having Oregon, USC, Utah in there, if they're undefeated there, I think they're going to be in a good place. I think there are just too many teams here with new coaches or fully overhauling things in ways that are just like, I have no idea what to expect from ASU or Colorado or Stanford. Like, I think there is going to be a team that is like last year's Oregon State that is written off as being so-so and is actually dangerous. Who that team is, I lean Arizona, but I'm not positive yet.
Yeah, I mean, all too often, the best compliment you could give any team when looking at this schedule in May is not really saying much about them at all.
Right.
And I think Arizona falls into that category. I think Oregon falls into that category as well. You know, I'm high on UCLA because of the schedule. You are too. I like Washington's. I like Oregon State's. I think Cal's is interesting because of situations and some changing dynamics. Those are teams that I came away from this more interested in. I don't know if it necessarily changed my opinion about how successful they'll end up being on a Saturday afternoon. But again, if you come out of this, no notes, looks okay to me. Generally, I think if we did the math on how we've done over the course of our stay here as podcasters, we would find that the teams that we have the least amount to say about, they generally end up doing okay.
Am I losing my mind, or did we not talk about Arizona?
I don't know if we talked about Arizona. Did we not?
I don't think we did, because you said that's a compliment to a team quietly jumping up.
Oh, we didn't talk about them.
I think I went into a fugue state if we did, because I have Arizona schedule thoughts.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Arizona people. Let's knock out Arizona right here. 5.5 over under.
Yeah, because I feel like I would have talked about Mississippi State, and like they've got incredible home road splits, do they not?
They do. So, okay, my first thought after looking at this was, I'm not sure how they get the 6 wins since the over-under is 5.5. It is not that brutal of a slate, though. And I'd probably put it, fair to say, in like the lower half of the league in terms of difficulty.
Yeah, they miss Oregon.
They miss Oregon, and over assumes that they go 4-0 against Northern Arizona, UTEP, Stanford, and Colorado, and that they're stealing two more along the way from the following slate. At Mississippi State, home against Washington. At USC, at Wazoo, home against Oregon State, UCLA, and Utah, and on the road at ASU. They do catch USC a week before USC plays Notre Dame on the road. And they also get Utah at home a week after Utah plays Washington. I think 6 is asking a lot, but this team just scares me. They frighten me, because I feel like there's a lot of potential energy here that we can't quite always account for.
Watch out for T-Mac this year. That's all I'm telling you. Watch out for T-Mac. Okay, so this is a good question of, do you want your winnable games at home or on the road?
Yeah.
For Arizona, as they try to take the next step. It's great that their home road splits are, look, they're at USC, as you mentioned, but getting Washington, UCLA, Oregon State, and Utah all in Tucson, if I'm reading the schedule correctly. That's great from a, can Arizona beat good teams? Well, I think they're more likely to beat those good teams in Tucson than they are on the road. But also, if I'm Arizona and I'm trying to get to 7 wins, 6-7 wins, get back to bowl eligibility, I want to load up the home slate with winnable games. And that's where I'm a little bit worried, which I think echoes what you're saying.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, get those tough, if you're going to lose those games, if you're likely going to lose those games, you might as well lose them on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of where are you coming from. If you're Arizona and you want to get to a bowl game, I think you want to try and have as many of the easy ones as home as possible. If you're a team like, I don't know.
It depends on your aspiration.
Yeah, if you're Georgia and you're playing the same teams, it's helpful to have them on the road. At least you could say, well, we played UTEP, but it was on the road. You know, we played Washington, but it was on the road. Yeah. That type of thing. I would just want the wins however I could get them. And I think it's asking a lot that they go 4-0 against those four teams. I don't think that's a given. I like Arizona a lot,
right?
But I don't think we can necessarily just go to the bank with 4 wins. And of those other games, I believe they're good enough to win 2 of those and get to the over. I just don't know which ones they are. There's some pretty good teams. Can they beat ASU in the rivalry? Yeah, they can beat ASU in the rivalry. But going to Wazoo, I don't know. It starts to get a little hairy. Are they going to knock off Washington or USC or UCLA? It starts to get tougher for me to find that path to 6. So I can see 5-7.
Yeah.
6-6. I would not want that bet.
Can I counter the counter to the counter?
Please.
Can you name me 2 good defenses on the schedule?
No.
At least on the Pac-12 Oregon portion State, of the schedule.
Oregon State should be fine. Utah should be fine.
Yes, Utah, Oregon State is the 2. And I think Oregon State right now is a maybe.
Yeah.
Mississippi State is a maybe, but a lot of change there. But at least on the Pac-12 portion of the schedule, starting with Stanford, 2 legit good defenses. I think Washington will be decent at times, but I think at times they're going to look like they did against Arizona last year. That's the counter to the counter to the counter.
So you're in on Arizona. You're in on Zona.
I think I am. I would like Arizona better if Don Brown were still calling the defense and just blitz the hell out of everybody like he always does. But otherwise, I think so. I think Arizona will play offense as well as most teams do their best thing this year, if not better.
Are there any other teams that I forgot in my hastiness to try and get this Pac-12 show over?
We talked Cal, Stanford, Wazoo, Oregon State, ASU, Arizona. Now we did Colorado. We nibbled on UCLA's schedules here.
We did.
We talked Oregon, Washington, SC, and Utah. Yep, we're good. You want to talk San Diego State just to cover our bases by the time people listen to the show in August or something?
Oh no. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited for this slate of games. It would suck to me if there weren't a representative from this conference in the playoff.
Sure.
It would, because I believe there are at least three very legit contenders in the Pac-12. USC and Oregon at the top. But then Washington would yell, hey, what about us? Utah, depending on where they're at with Cam Rising, that could be another situation. We won't talk about his knee again. Yep. Oregon State is lurking. UCLA's got a beautiful schedule. I'll play it again. Treasure! I mean, it really is a treasure.
Yeah.
So there, we're talking six teams there that are very interesting for a variety of reasons. And so I know that there are a lot of folks who listen on the East Coast and don't care as much about West Coast football, be it because of time zones or because they're just not into the teams. But there's a lot to like this year. And I would hope folks approach the conference differently in 23.
So who's the playoff team that you would have?
Well, originally it was USC. I don't think so after seeing the schedule. I think it's Oregon, to be honest with you.
Do you think if everybody played the same exact schedule, who is built to be that playoff team?
If everybody played the exact same schedule?
Yeah. If we put all these teams in a bubble and they all just played each other, who is best built to go 12-1, essentially? Again, you haven't previewed. This is just me putting you on the spot. This is just speaking from your esophagus.
All things being equal, exact same teams, I might give the nod to USC because of Caleb Williams.
Sure.
But that's a nod above Oregon.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit closer with Oregon because I think they beat Washington and Oregon State with a healthy Bo Nix last year. But, you know, ifs and buts are candy and nuts. If I had wheels, I'd be a bicycle. So, I think Oregon's in a better place because of the defense, or at least the ceiling of the defense this year.
No.
And so, the best part of Oregon and USC is Caleb Williams. So I'm totally fine with that answer.
Let us know what you think. We're at solidverbal@gmail.com. Also on social media, we would encourage you to reach out on Twitter, Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram, wherever, whatever you got, reach on out. Let us know your thoughts on the schedule here. If you are listening to the plain old fashioned podcast, hit subscribe or follow, leave a star rating or review. That stuff helps, of course.
Yes.
And if you want to further support the stuff that Dan and I are doing here with the show, with the bonus content, with the Patreon community, the Discord server, go to verballers.com, verballers.com, and sign up to be a certified or premium verballer. It really does help.
Can I ask you one final question?
Please.
What are your thoughts on fettuccine Alfredo?
Not so much into the Alfredo sauce.
Yeah.
Not a big Alfredo sauce fan.
You like a vodka sauce?
I do like a vodka sauce.
You like a cream-based pasta sauce?
Yeah. Not too gung-ho
on the Alfredo
sauce.
It's a little too one-note.
Yeah.
A little goopy.
Yep.
Yeah. Can't say I'm a huge fan. Love pasta. Remember really enjoying going to Olive Garden as a kid.
Oh, I love Olive Garden.
Get those breadsticks. Get that salad bowl going.
I still buy the Olive Garden Italian dressing. Not a sponsor.
Is it good?
It's very good. Salad dressing is fantastic.
All right. I don't remember what I used to get from Olive Garden. Maybe ravioli of some kind. But fettuccine Alfredo. Not something I see myself ordering.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, thanks for walking through another conference with us. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.